Hey, everybody. Welcome to tonight's program. My name is Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Thank you for tuning in. Did you watch any of the testimony today in front of the House, what was it, Kathy, House Energy Committee? Financial Services Committee, chaired by Barney Frank. That was certainly a lot of interesting back and forth between the members of Congress who have never had the courage to stand up to the auto industry, and the auto industry, which never had the decency to provide Americans the sort of vehicles that would have precluded the foreign imports coming in here. The auto industry that has no problem destroying cities like Flint, Michigan, or Detroit, Michigan, or Toledo, Ohio, or just right down the list. Well, how do they do that, Mike? By closing their factories, by outsourcing, by union busting, by sending branches of their auto supply companies into China or North Mariana Islands or Mexico or wherever. And all of a sudden, there they were in front of Congress, whining and wheedling and pleading and begging for billions of dollars. These are the men whose annual take-home salary will range anywhere from a couple million to $15 million a year. This parade of executives who have gone before Congress in the past couple of months, the financial service executives, the automobile executives, the banking executives, just on and on and on. You know, the masters of the universe, the millionaires, the billionaires, the people who with a stroke of a pen sign off on hundreds of millions of dollars of bonuses for people who sit in glass offices in New York City or Washington, D.C. or wherever they sit, and wipe out this group of people and enhance that group of people, wipe out another group of people. You know, to hell with these people. What? Where are the Republicans screaming, let them go down? I realize that Shelby and Jeff Sessions, Amaral Obama, they would like to see the domestic auto industry die. But that's because they've got several factories in the state of Alabama that are owned by foreign producers, which is fine. I am starting to tend to agree. This is an industry that has given America the middle finger for how long now? I mean, how long? And I'm not just talking about producing junk cars and garbage and planned obsolescence and all the rest of that. I'm talking about the way that the auto industry has treated the American worker. You know, the auto worker. Oh, I know what you're going to say. Well, Lord, they're the highest paid. Yeah, okay. With the give backs and everything that the auto workers have done over the past 15, 20, 25 years in order to save this corrupt industry, it's incredible. But there they are. There they were, the three blind mice sitting up there today. Help me. Help me, please. Help me. Give me money. They all want money, don't they? Huh? Well, we'll get to that a little bit later tonight, too. Glenn Beck, the radio talk show host and another one of these right-wingers who comes crawling out of the nest of weasels. There must be an endless supply of these weasels. He has had a show on Cable News Network on Headlines Division, CNN Junior, as we used to call it. He's now going over to Fox, which is where he belongs. I think these people ought to be clustered in the same place. I really do. And then the next time there's a terrorist attack on America, maybe they will hit that building and, you know, they'll all be gone. Huh? How about that?
Ooh, that's the kind of joke that Michael Savage might say.
Or comment, not joke, because I mean it. But anyway, Glenn Beck, who has never been accused of not trying to foment hatred between at least two, possibly four, 20 or 30 different groups of people who constitute the makeup of this society, he's revealed that he was, his word, accosted at his local Wendy's Saturday night. Well, if you look at Glenn, you understand why he's eating at a dump like Wendy's. But last Saturday night, he went to Wendy's, and he revealed this on his radio show, I guess a couple of days ago. Somebody sent this. It's from Huffington Post. In his attempt to procure a Frosty. Yeah, that figures. He was stopped by a truck driver who called him a racist bigot. Now, this is Beck's rant, as it appeared at Huffington Post. It happened to me at Wendy's Saturday night. We were on the bus, and we stopped to get fuel, and I said, I'm going to run in. I'm treating. Everybody wants a Frosty. I'm going to go get Frosties. And one of the security guys said, no, you're not. And I said, yeah, I am. I mean, it's a truck stop. How much trouble am I going to get in a truck stop? Everybody here you can trust. You're not going in. I went in, but I had to bring the SWAT team with me. And so I just want a Frosty, please. And the guy standing next to me, who, by the way, I may point out, had food in his hair, is a truck driver. And he turned around. He looked at me, and the recognition was immediate. And he said, you racist bigot. And I just said, I wanted to say, I think you had me mistaken for someone else, but I knew he knew who I was, and he just hated me for who I was. You conservatives that have destroyed this country. And the hatred was so deep, it was breathtaking. Luckily, the SWAT team was there, and I just separated myself from him, and he just shouted through other people, and there were children in the restaurant, and he blamed me for everything, I believe including the Holocaust, and the hatred was palpable. The guy screamed at the restaurant, you better not let me see you in the parking lot because I've got a truck and I'll run your ass over. Wow, is this who we've become? Is this who we've become? No. Glenn, it's who you've become. It's what you are. You are a racist bigot. Why do these right-wingers, why are they incapable of understanding what they are? Claim it. Claim it, Glenn. That's your whole goddamn claim to fame. That's your entire act. Don't run away from it. You are a racist bigot and a sneak and a liar and a phony and a weird ass who eats Wendy's and drinks Frosties. Do you know you're going to die? You know what's going to happen? Your arteries, as we speak, Glenn, are just filling up with yellow coagulated fat. Do you realize that? When's the last time you went for a run, Glenn? When's the last time you did any exercise at all? But I digress. So Glenn Beck wants to know, is this who we've become? No, Glenn, that's the kind of response you expect, promote, and invoke from people who are just trying to get their Frosty. What a creep. Well, but these right-wingers, and they're going to have a heyday with the Obama administration, and that's fine. I'm rapidly getting to the point where no more talk about these evil snots. I've spent too much of my waking time, especially on this radio program, talking about what Rush said or what Limbaugh said, or what Hannity said or what Savage said, because of the geek and freak value, the enormity of the asininity of what they say. But why waste the time? Except for something like this. When Glenn Beck says, is this what we've come to? Yeah, you dumbass, that's what you helped to create. Good God. Now, when I first saw the story, I thought I was going to say Glenn Beck run over in a truck stop parking lot by an irate trucker. That would have made me extremely happy. It really would have. Oh! You know, the guy runs over again, and then calls 911. I think I ran over something in the parking lot here. It looks like a huge sack of garbage, and it wrecked my truck. Have I mentioned yet tonight how much I hate these people? Oh, my God. The economic meltdown is affecting more than just your local Circuit City. Focus on the family, the little nest of right-wing religious haters. Focus on the Family says it is eliminating 202 jobs. The deepest cuts in the 32-year history of this group of nasty, phony Christians. The Focus on the Family laid off 149 workers and cut another 53 vacant positions. We'll have some more when we come back from the break. I got to share this with you.
Does that mean James Dobson is going to have to outsource the beating of his animals to someone else?
Yeah, probably. They'll probably outsource it to some country where they need jobs. Beating animals and showering with your naked son so he can see your weenie and realize that... I don't know, what was that? Oh, the best way to make sure your son doesn't turn out gay is to shower with him and let him look at dad's junk. Right? Isn't that what Dobson said? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malone.
Is red, my collar blue. I like it that way. I don't hear liberals talking to me. I don't see things their way. Yeah, I'm on the right side. side, the only side.
Standing up to the flying monkey right, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Yeah, Focus on the Family announced a couple of days ago that they are slashing their workforce by nearly 18%. Does this mean God is pissed off at them for working against the right of folks who happen to be gay to get married? I would think so. I think God is withholding money because he's getting a little bit pissed off. I mean, it's one thing to be God, you know, you get to have a lot of fun watching your creation down here just running around, butchering each other and causing each other untold episodes of hell. But it's something else again after, you know, I would assume if I were God, after watching the little creeps down here running around doing all these bad things in my name, eventually I would have to take them to the woodshed, so to speak, and either, I don't know, kill them with lightning bolts or if probably not quite as profound as killing them with lightning bolts, although it may upset them more, withhold their donations. The organization, Focus on the Family, also cut its budget from $160 million to $138 million. Imagine all the hungry people they could feed with all that money instead of going out petitioning people to sign on to go straight to hell because of their hatred and their violation of what Jesus told them to do 2,000 years ago. The head of the Colorado Springs Economic Development Corporation, which keeps an eye on companies like Focus on the Family because they do bring in revenue, you see, this guy says it's probably going to get worse. When people have to cut back, the only place they have to go is their discretionary income. I guess that what that means is the contributions to Focus on the Family, the hell money, the death money, the murder money, that the number of those contributions is going to drop. Glenn Williams, who is Focus on the Family's chief operating officer. I don't know. There's a lot of money in the God business, isn't there? Oh, my goodness. Glenn Williams said that more than 95% of the organization's income comes from donations. And you know what accounts for the other 5%? Book sales. Book sales. Oh, my God. These people, you know, you could slap anything between two hard cardboard covers and call it, that's a book. Oh, yeah? Really? What's it say? Well, you know, how to be a good Christian. Oh, okay. Donations are falling and falling and falling. According to the COO of Focus on the Family, the most visible change will be the elimination of the print editions of four of its eight magazines. Whew. Eight magazines? The content of the magazines will remain online. The magazines are Plugged In, Breakaway, Brio, and Brio and Beyond. Oh, my God. Although Focus on the Family grabs most of its headlines on political topics, it spends only 6% of its budget in that arena, such as the roughly $500,000 this corrupt, filthy organization spent to support Prop 8 in California. My goodness. Well, any Focus on the Family member, Focus on the Family employees who are being laid off, understand what happened. This is just God's way of pinching you a little bit. You know how your grandma used to, my grandma used to do in church. I would sit next to her during big church, and if I wiggled around or didn't do what I was supposed to do, she'd reach over and pinch. Well, God is pinching you, you little Christians, you little phony Christians. And good luck in the job market there in Colorado Springs, huh? All right, we all know where we are regarding the economy, right? We're in absolute economic hell, and every single day, I read predictions. It's going to get worse, much worse, before it gets better. Unless really, or even if really drastic action is taken by the incoming Obama administration, a drastic action like an immediate extension, this should happen on the Bush watch, but it won't, immediate extension of unemployment benefits, immediate extension of the Children's Health Insurance Program, immediate extension and expansion of Medicaid. All these things have to happen yesterday. They're not happening. We're having hearings, you see. We're having hearings where members of Congress who never did anything about this outlaw automobile industry sit there and bitch and whine and make smarmy remarks to corporate morons who also sit there and take the beating because, you know, before they go in there, they say to each other, all right, well, we're going to have to go in and sit before Barney Frank's committee and get bitch slapped a little bit, but it doesn't matter. We're rich. We're going to continue to be rich. The auto industry is going nowhere. It may fold in this country, but God, I mean, can you imagine how much we'd be paid to go to China and help them set up theirs? Relax, everybody. Just go in and take it, okay? It doesn't mean anything. Well, with one phone call, George W. Criminal Bush could relieve the economic pain of millions. I'll tell you how when we come back.
Strong winds, strong winds, sway our hearts. Many dead tonight could be. Strong winds, strong winds, strong winds. Many dead tonight could be.
Every
homeless,
homeless,
homeless, homeless. Moonlight sleeping
on the midnight
bed.
Homeless,
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 homeless. Moonlight sleeping on the midnight.
That fish and humans can coexist peacefully. It's more of Mike Malloy.
I wonder how many people don't realize, Kathy, that that is something George Bush said. Oh, well. All right. Jim McDermott, who is a member of Congress from Washington State, he's a Democrat, and he posted this at his website a couple of days ago, and then it was picked up by alternate.org, and it's spread around the internet. Here's what Jim McDermott had to say. By making just one telephone call, the president could single-handedly jumpstart the U.S. economy and throw economic lifelines to millions of unemployed Americans. That's according to Jim McDermott, chairman of the Income Security and Family Support Subcommittee. Now, that committee oversees the nation's unemployment insurance system. He made the comment following release of troubling new data that show a surge in unemployment filings to levels not seen in at least 7 years. Now, McDermott explained that he's got a piece of legislation. It's called H.R. 6867 that will extend unemployment benefits. It passed the House in early October on a vote of 368-28. Now, that's bipartisan. 368-28 to extend unemployment benefits. But guess what? That's right. When the legislation got to the Senate, the Republicans, after consulting with the Bush bastard, said no and would not permit the legislation to come to the floor for a vote. Now, why am I just hearing about this in a press release from Jim McDermott? Why is that not on the nightly news for the past 4 or 5 days? Why, and how do the Senate Republicans, who are in the minority, how did they do this? How do they stop it from happening? Where are the Democrats? Where are these cowardly goddamn Democrats who do this time and time again? I wonder if Barack Obama or Rahm Emanuel or Tom Daschle or any of these people who are joining the Barack Obama administration, I wonder if they will be able to inspire the Democrats to act like adults and say to the Republicans, sit the goddamn hell down and shut up. You had your 10 years. You ruined everything. Don't make a sound. Sit there. Time out. Ooh. After consulting with the president, the Republicans refused to let the legislation come onto the Senate floor for a vote. Now, the bill would extend benefits a minimum of 7 weeks. 7 weeks. In every state, but 13 weeks in states where the unemployment rate has averaged 6% or higher over 3 months. They always have to have some little dumbass formula, don't they? Huh? Why not just extend unemployment benefits for another 52 weeks? Very simply, do it! No, no, can't do that. We need the billions and billions and trillions for the financial services industry, right? And the auto industry, right? And the banks and the insurance companies. But the workers of America? Come on, Malloy. Come on. Representative McDermott noted that members of Congress will be in D.C., next week, which is what's the date today, Kathy? That was last week. Today, where are we? Is this what's the date today? I have no idea. What's the date today? Is this the 18th, 19th? All right. Well, members of Congress are in Washington now, and the Senate could quickly pass this bill, and the president could sign legislation before they all go home to eat their dead turkeys, right? But no, that's not going to happen. Representative McDermott added that the money to pay for extended unemployment benefits is in a federal trust fund right now. And it is meant to be used in a time like this. And of course, it's not tax money per se. It's money collected from every employer based on the number of employees, right? Alternet goes on to say, furthermore, independent studies showed that an unemployment insurance benefit is money that is almost immediately reinjected into the economy to pay for food, housing, medical expenses. Oh, my God. The legislation that Representative McDermott has suggested would provide approximately $6 billion in additional unemployment insurance benefits. And economists conclude that every dollar yields approximately $1.64 in economic impact as the money ripples through the economy. But the Senate Republicans, you filthy bastards, will not do it. They want to destroy everything. Who can vote for a Republican? Who does this other than here in the dumbass South? Who does this? Who votes for people like these Republicans? Who does that? What is wrong with the people who vote for Republicans? Representative McDermott, pointed to a quote by Mark Zandi at Moody's Economy.com made earlier this year. Here's the quote. Quote, the benefit of extending unemployment insurance goes beyond simply providing financial aid for the jobless to more broadly shoring up household confidence. Nothing is more psychologically debilitating, even to those still employed, than watching unemployed friends and relatives lose benefits. The slump in consumer confidence in late 1991, after the 1990-1991 recession, may very well have been due in part to the first Bush administration's initial opposition to extending benefits to hundreds of thousands of workers, end quote. McDermott concluded, quote, we are in the midst of an economic emergency. One telephone call by the president is all it would take to make a dramatic and immediate difference in the lives of ordinary Americans, end quote. So simple, huh? So simple. But Republicans, being the filthy, filthy, disgusting bastards that they are, say no. No. Senate Republicans say no. Nuh-uh. I'm going to do it. No. Why not? Because we talked to the president and the vice president. No, not going to do it. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Now, see, that's the kind of stuff that just makes me murderously angry. I mean, doesn't it? A phone call. No act of Congress. Nothing to do with taxes. Nothing to do with anything. The money is sitting there. It requires a presidential phone call to these pigs in the Senate, the Republicans, to say, oh, okay, come on, get on the ball. 85% of the House voted in favor of this. Release the money. Vote to release it. See, it takes an act of Congress to release it because it's in a trust fund. And they won't do it. They won't do it. A week before Thanksgiving, a month before Xmas, and they won't do it. But the big boys in the services sector, AIG, hey, give us $100 billion, here it is. Give it another $80, here it is. Give it another $50, here it is. In the financial services sector, hey, give us $100 billion. Give us $150 billion. Hey, give us some more. No, we're going to, I know what we're supposed to do, but we're not. Give us more. Well, another $100 billion. Give us more. Give us more. The auto industry? Hey, we want $25 billion or we're going to go bankrupt. Come on. But the average working Joe the plumber, you remember Joe the plumber, don't you? Huh? The average working Joe? The average working Jane? Unemployment benefits? What are you, some kind of a freeloader? Tom in Joshua Tree, California writes, Mike, Professor Ravi Batra gave the most cogent solution to the auto industry bailout I have yet heard. He says, let the government buy all the stock of the auto industry, and couldn't they get it cheaply, sell it back to the workers, and let the new owners determine the fate of their own business plan that will keep them and their children in work forever. Now, that's a socialism, Tom writes, that works. A corporation of the people, by the people, and for the people. I wonder why the unions aren't picking up on this. Where are they? Where are they, the unions, in all this? What we're getting is not socialism, it's fascism. Giving the people's money to the corporations. I don't understand, Tom writes, what the problem is. Why this is not being done. Are we that stupid? Is it possible? Tom, in Joshua Tree, California. I would like to think it's because we're stupid. We're very stupid people. We're a greedy, gimme-gimme kind of society. You know, we're attacked by 19 bombers, and the leader of our country says go shopping, and we goddamn do it. We go do it. Yeah, it's called democratic socialism or social democracy. And truth be told, we better get there quickly. You know what I'm saying? Everybody wins. Let's go shopping. Let's go shopping. From our economic affairs correspondent, Prairie 2 writes, Mike, the stock markets went to new lows today on the news that the current Congress will not likely approve a loan to the auto industry. And the White House made it clear that only bankers will get money from the Bush crime family. With a record drop in the Consumer Price Index, which is the broadest gauge of inflation, the London Interbank Overnight Rate will move up again. This signals a further freezing up of the credit markets, as deflation now seems more likely. Tightening credit and a glut of foreclosed houses precipitated a dramatic drop in housing starts, the worst since World War II. A flood of construction bankruptcies are expected to join a tidal wave of retail store failures at the first of the year. This will spread further to manufacturing as consumers without jobs spend even less, causing more layoffs and round and round and round and round. These problems, Prairie Two writes, could be dealt with if there was anybody in charge. The Bush crime family and the Republicans in Congress are perfectly happy with the economic death spiral they have created. The reason the auto executives seem less than cooperative is that they really don't care. Their golden parachutes will save them and everybody else be damned. Work for a dollar a year? Ha ha, kiss my well-polished ass. 20 million newly unemployed Americans just means that they can hire servants cheaper. When they bring the turkey in for the annual presidential pardon, the IQ in the room will go up. For those of you who have never met a domestic turkey, they are known for a percentage of them dying in their outside yards when it rains. Because if the rain starts with big drops, some of those turkeys struck in the head will look up and stare with fascination, their mouths open in amazement, and they drown. George Bush has a Secret Service agent to keep him from doing this. Yeah, I'm really concerned about where we're heading here economically. There is so much being put on the shoulders of this 47-year-old president-elect. There really is. I don't care if you like him or not. I don't care what your feelings are about his policies or his appointments, some of which are spooking the hell out of me. But the burden, I mean, he's got to deal with Bush's executive orders. He's got to deal with an economic stimulus plan, Iraq, healthcare reform, energy, in the economy, a bailout for, so-called Main Street, the poverty and inequality that just seems to be getting worse, labor and trade, global warming, science, Guantanamo, torture, executive power. All of this. I wonder if he'll be able to do it. Wouldn't you know it, though, the worst time in American history since the 30s, and white people say, nah, that's all right, give it to the black guy. We don't want anything to do with this. Yo, bring in the black guy. Let him do it, man. Hey, nah, I'm leaving. I'm out of here. Bye. What is a report from Zawahiri, or whatever his name is, the number two man in Al-Qaeda, which I thought we'd killed about four times, but pops up with another tape. It's an audio tape with English subtitles, and refer to Barack Obama as a house Negro. You know, that's strictly a term from over here in the racist southern part of the United States of America from the middle 19th century. How in the world does Zawahiri, or whatever the hell his name is, how does he, I mean... I guess it's the job of the number two man in the Al-Qaeda organization to know our vernacular, our idiomatic language, our slang terms, whether they came from white folks or black folks or green folks or whatever. But like moi, do you find it not a little unusual that that term would be used by a so-called number two man in Al-Qaeda? It just sometimes makes me put on my well-worn, at this point, tinfoil hat. As a matter of fact, I'm going to have to get a new one here. This one's damn near worn out. But it almost makes me want to put on my tinfoil hat and pick up the emanations and vibrations that are floating through the 12th dimension. As they flow by me with my tinfoil hat, I pick up on them and they say, "There is no Al-Qaeda. There is no Zawahiri. There is no Bin Laden. This is all a trick. All of it. All these audio videotapes, a trick. A trick. It's a CIA operation funded by very, very wealthy people, Mike. No, it can't, couldn't be that. It just absolutely couldn't. The list of things that Barack Obama has to do comes from the current issue of The Nation. And when we come back, I just want to touch on that a little bit. The stuff that's facing him. And also, JT wrote in the Chicken Little theory on auto manufacturer bailouts. Really? And he packs it all into about two sentences. All right, we have miles to go before we keep tonight, so I hope you're going to stick around. If you have to leave, okay, I understand. That's cool. But the best part of the program is coming up, so... Oh, that sounded good. All right, Truth Seekers, take a break, all right? It's time for Top of the Hour news and some commercials and stuff like that, and then we'll be back for the second hour. Hope you're going to be here. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. Mike Malloy here on Nova M. We'll get to this nation thing in a second. I guess I see there's some people here would like to make some comments. Let's start with Sydney, who is calling from South Carolina, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Sydney.
Hello, Mike.
Hey.
Hi. How you doing this evening?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good. I guess I just had a question about the financial bailout.
Uh-huh.
As far as the money that they're putting towards these banks, where's the money coming from? I mean, don't we have to have gold to back the money?
No, we haven't had gold backing our money in a couple of generations. We haven't had anything backing our money except how's it explained? The goodwill of the American government. I don't know. The money is only worth what it's worth because people believe it's worth what it's worth. If people stop believing that it's worth what it's worth, then it's no longer worth what it's worth and starts to sink to a level below what it's worth now.
Because I thought, you know, there had to be collateral with the money. It seems like they're just printing money and borrowing money from China and stuff. And so I guess I was kind of confused.
Well, it's designed to keep folks like me and folks like you completely confused. Why, I don't know. I guess because if we fully understood it, we would all either swoon or pick up guns and take to the streets. One of the two. I really don't know. But the reason they give money to the banks, the theory being, is that then the banks will stop being cowardly, which is what they are right now. They don't trust each other. So if enough cash is infused into the banks, then the banks will do the only thing that banks are any good at, and that's lending money to small businesses to make payrolls, to people who want to improve their homes, to folks who want to buy a house. But banks in the first place ought to be, eliminated as, an agency. Set up credit unions. Again, You know, a credit union is owned by the depositors. Another example of social democracy or democratic socialism. There are no stockholders in a credit union. There are only the owner, well, literal stockholders, the people who own a share. I believe that's what it's called. I've been a share owner in my credit union since 1986, and I've never had a problem. That's where I have my house mortgage. It's where I've had three or four car loans. It's where I've had home improvement loans. It's where I've had savings accounts. It's where I've bought CDs. On and on. I don't deal with banks. I see banks as being predatory, nasty, filthy, that they suck off everything out of a society, especially when a society gets to this point that we're at now, where the one thing the banks could do would be to free up capital, and they won't. So that's part of the problem. Now, to continue to throw money at them, which is what this disgusting head of the Federal Reserve and this even more disgusting Secretary of the Treasury, what they're doing, when any fool knows that the problem is down here with us people who need money to make mortgage payments or make car payments or buy groceries or pay for, to take our kid to a pediatrician or what have you. We're the ones that need it, not these predatory bastards that have gotten us to this point. I hope that answers your question. I'm sorry, Sydney. I got carried away, right?
Appreciate it. I just want to make one comment. You know, it seems like it's kind of like, the monopoly money that, you can just print.
It is like monopoly money, and what it's backed with, Laura just sent this to me. It's backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. Well, if that's the case, I don't know about you, but I have no faith in this government. And as far as its credit rating, if the U.S. government were rated by one of these rating companies, what would it be? Junk bonds? Zero worth? How do you rate a nation that's $12 trillion in debt? Invisible debt. Invisible debt. God only knows how much invisible debt. Did that make sense? We're really in hock for. So, the money. You know, the ones, fives, tens, twenties, fifties, and hundreds, and that's about as high as we go in our income bracket. But that money is backed by what is called the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, the Federal Reserve, your auntie. I don't know. I have no idea. But you're right, Sydney. It's like monopoly money, or worse. Thanks, Sid. Linda is calling from Cleveland, Ohio, listening on Sirius. Hey, Linda.
Yes, hi.
My
comment is about this is the Republican war against unions.
Uh-huh.
They've set the stage for this final assault on the summit of union strength, that is the car industry and the steel industry. First, they had the $4 a gallon gas, so people wouldn't buy the gas guzzlers. Second, they dried up the loans so people wouldn't have money to buy cars. Third, they eliminated jobs so that the support people had so they can't buy cars. And four, they drive the companies out of business. Even if the unions agreed to $5 an hour pay, they want to get rid of the unions, period. And this is a Republican extortion scheme to suck the government dry, to control and dominate workers, and to destroy America. This is a shock doctrine, and it's crisis capitalism.
Well, you know what, Linda? You probably are absolutely right, and you put it very concisely. Thanks, Linda. I appreciate it. That's what it seems like. See, that's what I mean about my tinfoil hat, because I believe that the reverse of is it Occam's razor, Kathy, that says whatever the simplest solution is usually the right solution or something to that effect. Don't send it to me. But I believe in the reverse of that. Whatever seems the most complex and hideously designed is usually hideously designed and the most complex. And it's a plot, and, on and on and on. I mean, a very simple answer would be, well, no. First of all, yes, Republicans have always tried to destroy unions. Conservatives have, because union organization, union labor, is that you know, spreads the wealth around, as Barack Obama said, and freaked out Joe the plumber. Spread the wealth around? God damn, that's communism! No, no, it's not. It's just called spreading the wealth around a little bit. Unions have always been a target. Collective bargaining? Oh my God! You mean we, as the ownership class, we're not allowed to say to the workers, get your ass in here. No time off. If your old lady gets sick or has a baby, too bad. You women stay home. You're going to work a 70-hour week. We're going to pay you $2 an hour. And collective bargaining says, no, no, hell no. Well, of course, Republicans or conservatives or the owner class, they hate that. You know, they hate that. The bosses, they hate that. Well, you'll take away our 400 times your wages if you do that. Then we'll only make 20 times your wages. That's not fair. Bastards. So whether or not it's a plot to destroy unions, that's always in the back of the minds of Republicans. And unions are just about destroyed. Watching Ron Gettelfinger today sit there and testify also. I got mixed feelings about Gettelfinger. He has been instrumental in a lot of givebacks. He hasn't been around that long. Maybe, how long has he been there, Kathy? About 5-6 years? About that. He's the one that negotiated away on behalf of the workers, the UAW workers, just benefit after benefit after benefit. And the argument was Gettelfinger would meet with the owners or the corporate board, and they would say, Ron, if you don't go along with this, we're going to start firing even more of your cheesy-ass workers. You want some more of those people who live out in Hamtramck, Michigan and lose their houses? Huh? You want some more factories in Lima, Ohio, laid off and closed? Huh? Do you, buddy? So Gettelfinger would go back to the union and say, all right, this is the best deal I can get for you. Wage freeze. They're going to cut back on our time off. They're going to reduce our pension plans, but it's the best I can do. At least we're all working. And what Gettelfinger should have done, I think, is sat there in the board meeting and said something to the effect, go ahead, try it, bastard, and your factories will burn. Past the hour, what Obama is facing in the first 100 days, well, first of all, as the nation points out, and this is hysterically funny to me, if you remember right before the election, these Republican pissants were warning that Barack Obama would bring too much change too soon, that he was a socialist who would spread the wealth around, and that his election would usher in one-party rule. Remember all that? Remember McCain and Palin up there constantly every day? He's a socialist! Oh, he's a socialist! Listen to Joe the Plumber. Joe, are you here? Say the word! Socialist. Good, Joe! Then, right after Obama's incredible victory, the biggest margin of victory in what? I mean, Clinton never got that, did he? In either election, I don't know. But screw that. But in the days after the victory, the Republicans then tried to claim that his election represented no change at all. And as a matter of fact, the chairman of the Republican National Committee, Mike Duncan, said that Barack Obama's not even really a Democrat. Mr. Duncan claimed that Obama won because, quote, he ran the most successful moderate Republican presidential campaign since Dwight Eisenhower, end quote. What? On Monday, he's a socialist who's going to spread the wealth around and destroy America. And on Wednesday, he's the most successful, ran the most successful Republican presidential campaign since Eisenhower. Republicans are just genetically brain dead, aren't they? I mean, oh my God. Anyway, he does face some really serious challenges. You know, 6-8 months ago, in a fit of horrible pique, I suggested one night, you know, let McCain have it because it's going to be hell. You know, oh man, did I get the emails on that one. But this is what Obama is facing, a broken economy, broken healthcare system, two wars, increasing poverty, especially because of what's happened with the economy, this growing inequality where some of these executives now make, 400 or 500 times what the average worker in their corporation makes. You have that kind of income disparity, and eventually you have revolution. It's just very simple. That doesn't, you know, they may get away with it for 10, 20, 30 years even, but eventually, since that can't be sustained, it can never be justified, but it certainly can't be sustained, eventually people say, this is ridiculous. I'm sick of watching my kids go hungry, knowing that some fat cat son of a bitch in a private jet is going to Aruba for the weekend, and the tumbrils start to turn, and the guillotine comes out, and we have another episode of the terror. Only not the kind of terror that the Bush crime family talks about. So, Barack Obama. Oh, plus the reputation of the U.S. in the rest of the world is in the commode. It's right down there with the nasty stuff. So what's he got to face? First of all, the Bush executive orders. Obama said when he was campaigning, quote, I would call my attorney general in and review every single executive order issued by George Bush and overturn those laws or executive decisions that I feel violate the Constitution, end quote. Okay. Economic stimulus. Barack Obama has got to stop the bleeding. He's got to expand health care and unemployment benefits. He's got to provide essential aid to state and local governments. And he's got to invest in long-delayed infrastructure projects. You see, to me, that's one of the keys right there. You know, do any of us realize what $700 billion would do if it were targeted toward infrastructure? All that stuff, schools, bridges, dams, roadways, power grid systems, sewer systems, just on and on and on. All this deferred maintenance, I love that expression, all this deferred maintenance that is just waiting for contractors and workers and electricians and bridge builders and engineers and construction workers and just, I mean, on and on and on. There's a solution. Why do I know that? And these clown jackasses sitting in these committees and grilling these useless piles of human DNA who sit there, fly in on their private jets. You know, to hell with all that. That's not real. Flick them away. Just flick. Take $700 billion and inject it into rebuilding the guts of the country. And watch what happens to the unemployment rate as it sinks. And watch what happens to the economy as it starts to flourish again. But no. That's way too simple. You wish I was.
Donald Trump coming. think actually the spending in the war might help with jobs because we're buying equipment and people are working. I think this economy is down because we built too many houses.
Little joke there, huh? Back to what Obama has to do, overturn the executive orders, stop the bleeding of the economy here. As far as the occupation of Iraq, he's got to hold to the 16-month timeline for withdrawal. Health care reform, he's got to expand health insurance to kids by passing the S-CHIP program that was or legislation that was vetoed by Bush. Yeah, Republicans. You right-wingers that listen to this program, how dare you? How dare you suggest that Republicans are family-friendly or that the Republican Party cares about families, that cares about the military, that cares about the worker, the common folk? Are you out of your goddamn minds? There is not a single action ever taken by any Republican ever without the prodding of a Democrat somewhere. I think about Nixon, who occasionally came up with something that made sense because it was forced on him. Oh, that's right, and his the residue of his Quaker upbringing. But there is nothing that a Republican can do for a family, for a soldier, for a single mom, for children in school. Nothing. But I digress. Women's health and reproductive rights, which means Obama has to repeal the so-called global gag rule, which prohibited non-government organizations that receive money from our holier-than-thou federal government from promoting or performing abortions in other countries. Can't even talk about it. Energy and the economy. He's got to announce a clean energy strategy that will also generate jobs, thousands of them. And also, as an unintended consequence of that, will improve national security. If we're no longer dependent on, oh, never mind. The big one right now is work to ensure that homeowners are able to renegotiate mortgages and remain in their homes. Somehow, some way, even if you call it rent, if you restructure the mortgages, whatever it is now, make it a 40-year mortgage, start all over again, give credit for a down payment based on what people have already paid in, set the interest rate at 6.5% or 5.5%. How much money do these predatory sons of bitches need? A 6% loan, you finance a $150,000 house, you know what you're going to be back in 30 years? $500,000. How much do they need? Moving along here, the nation says also he's got to address poverty and inequality by appointing, for example, a hunger czar like George McGovern called for in a recent op-ed, and not George McGovern himself, that this person would coordinate the various food, nutrition, and anti-poverty programs to increase the independence, purchasing power, and food security of every human being. I mean, you know, we can all be like Prairie 2 and keep buying canned goods, but at some point, you run out of money or you run out of space, one of the two. He's also got to address labor and trade by rejecting the Colombian, the Korean, and the Panama trade agreements, as currently written, and work toward passage of what's called the Employee Free Choice Act, which will allow workers to organize unions without fear of employer intimidation. You know what that means? They can just vote immediately as soon as a union organizer comes in and calls for a vote. Okay, let's vote. Oh, science. He's got to address the anti-science, crazy, screwed up, fake Christian garbage that has interfered with everything from stem cell research to space exploration. Can't go out there too far. Might find little green people running around on different planets, and you know what that'll do to the talking snake theory of creation back here on Earth. Guantanamo. Global warming. Where it concerns torture, officially reject all memos, signing statements, executive orders that justify the use of torture, end the use in court of any evidence obtained through torture. on and on and on. This is what Barack Obama has facing him. And you know what's going to happen? I'll tell you what's going to happen. The mainstream media is going to get over their fascination of a black man as president really, really quick. And because they are corporate dominated, all media, well, not all. I mean, Pacifica radio stations are not. This network isn't, the one I work for. But mainstream media, so-called, the onslaught is going to be merciless. It's already the pigs, the real filthy, smelly pigs led by Limbaugh and Hannity are already calling this an Obama recession. Huh? How about that? So the corporate media pigs will start their drumbeat. I'd be surprised if they give him 100 days. Problems that the Republicans have pushed onto America over the past 25 years, starting with Reagan. That's really when the serious destruction began. And Barack Obama's going to have 100 days. The Republican pigs had 25 years. Barack Obama's going to have 100 days. Huh? You know that's going to happen. See, we told you the black guy couldn't govern. See? You know what's going to happen. You know what's going to happen. Unless it turns out that the black guy does know how to govern. In a real crisis. In a real... Who could handle this? Could you, Truth Seeker? Could Newt Gingrich... Again, never mind. Who do you know? Who have you ever heard of that could handle governing this country right now, in these times, with what the new president is going to have to deal with? A lot of work ahead. Can you handle it? I mean, are you listening tonight? I'm talking about you. Yeah, you. I'm talking about you, specifically at you. Are you going to be able to handle this? You know, Kathy and I have had to sit down and take stock of a few things here, like, okay, what about this? All right, what about that? This wave is coming. It's coming. This meltdown, this economic meltdown, it is coming. I do believe we will come out of it, we being all of us, provided that no Republican gets any power anywhere at any time for the foreseeable future. Maybe we'll come through. I'm hoping we'll come through it. You know, I have grandchildren and a four-year-old. Maybe you have the same thing. As far as I'm concerned, oh, hell's bells. I can live on $100 a month. Still can. But not when you have a family and kids and grandkids, kids in school. You know, I got two of them in school now that require tuition. And I pay it. You know why I pay it? Well, in the first place, it'd be damn near impossible for him to get loans anywhere. Chris will be able to apply for some scholarships here pretty quick, so that they don't come out of school in debt. So Kathy and I have to sit down. We have to work this out. Okay, well, what about this? All right, you got $100. All right, we've got. Kathy says, well, you know what I brought to the marriage? I brought this little portfolio, which has now lost 46% of its value. What are we going to do? We sit here and we try to figure it out. And I drag out Prairie Two's memos, emails all the time, say, get canned goods! So it's directed right at you. Are you going to be okay? Are you going to make it? I know I get so many emails from so many people who you know, listen to this program and find something in this program that's meaningful to them. And they go ahead and talk about their personal lives. And I guess because I do. And some of them are really scared. Some of the people who write, send the emails to me, they're really, really, really scared. These are adults. These are men and women. These are people with families. You know, it's not that they're asking me, gee, Mike, what are we going to do? They have more sense than that. But they just share it, you know, just share the uncertainty and the anxiety. And, you know, what do you think is going to happen, Malloy? I think we'll come through this. But I think it's going to be very, very difficult for those of us who are what you call middle class or working class or lower middle class or working poor. There is a segment of the population in this country, the upper 5% maybe, who this is nothing. While the rest of us experience a tsunami, they barely get the bottoms of their feet wet. Prairie 2 writes, our money has been guaranteed by the full faith and credit of the United States since 1776, since we didn't have any gold. But the government has always had assets, like federal land, and its unlimited ability to tax. The so-called gold standard only really existed as a way to fix the dollar for currency trading by the Bretton Woods Agreement from 1944 until Nixon took us off in 1971. We used to have gold and silver coins and gold and silver-backed bills to counter bank-issued script that tended to cause bank panic. But we've always had greenbacks, as Lincoln called them, that could be used to buy things from the government at any time, like land, which we had plenty of.
In knowing that they don't know what they're talking about, because history takes a long time for it to reach, and there's no such thing as short-term history.
Oh, God. There's one more line in this email from Prairie 2. As far as where they're getting the bailout money, they're just printing it. Why exactly they're doing that is unclear. Stupidity, corruption, incompetence, plot to dominate the world for a neocon paradise, all of the above. So there you go. There you go. We had to get out of the way because of the commercial. JT Barb? Okay. This is the Chicken Little theory on auto manufacturer bailouts. Every time this crooked White House administration has wanted anything, they've gotten it by using fear tactics. Blah, blah, blah. We must act now! Blah, blah, blah. Same old fear-mongering they have been using for the last 8 years while they've stolen every nickel from the Treasury. Where was the vision of the future 8 years ago with these automakers? When they were making money hand over fist, selling millions of SUVs to keep those so-called soccer moms and getting billions from Texas Big Oil to keep pumping out these gas-guzzling machines, thus returning massive profits for the oil companies. If the automakers want to bail out now, since they're stuck with all these dinosaur vehicles that won't sell, let them go back to Texas Big Oil and lobby them for money. Well, yeah. Sure, but no, you know. Mike, I would love to hear your opinion or your contributors about why Al Gore's name has not come up in any cabinet appointment yet, especially for Secretary of State. Being the vice president for 8 years should make him as knowledgeable as Hillary. Maybe you can find time to talk about Al on your show. Well, if somebody wants to bring that up, I think Al Gore had made it clear, though, that he was finished with government work, you know, either legislative or executive. He'd had his belly full, and I certainly can't blame him. Bit of good news here. The American Constitutional Society for Law and Policy, the ACS, is pleased to announce that President-elect Barack Obama has chosen ACS Executive Director Lisa Brown as White House Staff Secretary. Now, let me digress. I've never heard of White House Staff Secretary. That's not like I don't know. Maybe it is like Rosemary Woods in the famous Nixon missing 18-minute tape or whatever. I don't know. But According to their press release, Lisa Brown has made an enormous contribution to the development of the American Constitutional Society over the last 6 years. We are pleased that such an able leader, an extraordinary person, will be serving Barack Obama. The end quote. The Obama-Biden transition team announcement noted that, quote, Lisa Brown is the executive director of the American Constitutional Society for Law and Policy. She was counsel to Vice President Gore from September 1999 through January 2001, deputy counsel from April 1997 through August 1999. In addition to advising the Vice President on legal issues, Lisa served on the Executive Board of the President's Committee for Employment of People with Disabilities, worked closely with the Vice President's Domestic Policy Office. She was an attorney advisor in the Office of Legal Counsel, the Department of Justice. She's a former law firm partner. She was a law clerk. She graduated magna cum laude from Princeton. She got a law degree with honors, University of Chicago Law School in 86. Now, all that to say that the American Constitutional Society for Law and Policy is one of the nation's leading progressive legal organizations, comprised of lawyers, judges, students, and policymakers committed to promoting the vitality of the Constitution. If that's the case, and keeping in mind that Barack Obama taught constitutional law, maybe here's one more crack so the light can get in that would indicate that once this administration finds its balance, and once the evidence starts to turn up, the irrefutable evidence, and once the whistleblowers begin to let everyone know the depth of the criminality of the Bush crime family, maybe, just maybe, the someone in the Obama administration will suggest what we were talking about the other night, the appointment and what I took from Harper's Magazine. The appointment of a commission of inquiry into the crimes committed by the Bush administration. All the crimes, domestic, foreign, constitutional, statutory, everything. Everything. One of those let the chips fall where they may situations. Maybe that will happen. Tom Daschle has accepted the offer to be Secretary of Health and Human Services. That was reported today. The appointment has not been officially announced, I don't think, but people in the know say the job is his. I don't know what his qualifications are to be head of Health and Human Services. He was a public policy advisor and member of the Legislative and Public Policy Group at Alston & Burr, the lobbying and law firm. He advises clients on issues including health care, financial services, taxes. He's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, liberal think tank. If you look at his CV, it looks like he is certainly qualified to do this. Tom Daschle, and I think, and I'm guilty of this, the little whining the other night about, well, I thought it was about change. It is about change. Just because we're seeing some familiar faces here, I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. Do you? All right, your phone calls when we come back. Stay with us. This is Nova M Radio. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program on Nova M. Couple of quick emails here. Carol writes in regarding the bailout of the auto industry. She writes, "Hi, Mike. You must be aware that the UAW is one of the most progressive unions. You must also be aware that unions are the bulwark against fascism. It is no secret that the Republicans want to get rid of the unions, just as Reagan got rid of the Professional Air Traffic Controllers Organization. Letting GM, Ford, and Chrysler fail guts the union influence, which we sorely need. You should see what Paul Krugman says about this. Watch tonight's Rachel Maddow show. Though he finds the auto industry executives as disgusting as you do, he sees inaction by Congress and the president as one of the most regressive actions they have ever taken. The impact on the economy will be nothing less than implosive. Remember that most GM workers are blue-collar, not the upscale white-collar workers of the financial industry. Extending unemployment benefits is a necessary component of our financial recovery, but it will never replace living wage union jobs." Yeah, well, thanks, Carol. That's where the conflict that I'm having comes in. I understand somebody sent me an email that Michael Moore was on Larry King tonight. And, of course, Michael Moore, remember his movie Roger and Me about Roger Moore, who was the head of General Motors, closing plant after plant after plant in Flint, Michigan, how it destroyed Flint. I went to Flint, actually moved to Flint, Michigan in October of 1969. The circumstances were bizarre enough. I don't need to go into detail. But I can remember going there in 1969. As you approach Flint, Michigan, I approached that city with a snowstorm. It was in October. I was coming from Florida, moving from Florida. Snowstorm in October. And, of course, the next day the snow was all black from the soot and stuff that was pumped into the air because the factories, the automobile factories, there's no such thing as scrubbers back in 1969. Nobody gave a damn. But the big signs on every road, including I-75 going into Flint, Michigan, sign said made you aware that you were going into a company town. It might as well have said, "We're General Motors and we own Flint, Michigan." Well, years and years and 20 lifetimes later, when I saw Michael Moore's movie, Roger and Me, it was just a flashback time for me. And I only stayed in Flint until the following April and then moved to to Atlanta in 1970. That's when I first moved to Atlanta. But having seen what a company town, having grown up in a company town, I mean, Toledo, Ohio, we were about four times as big as Flint, Michigan, but it was a company town. It was a feeder city for the auto industry. Everything, I mentioned this a couple of nights ago, everything from axles, transmissions, windshields, everything. Knowing how those blue-collar jobs, how important they are, and how important union representation and unionized workers is. This is where I have the conflict. I think Carol, makes an excellent point. Unions have always been a bulwark against fascism. That's true. That's very true. So what to do? What the hell to do? What to do? I like the idea of they want to save the auto industry, they being whoever is making these decisions. I don't even know anymore. Do you? Let the government buy all the stock. What is General Motors stock right now? $260? $2.60? Is that, I mean, that's mind-boggling. Let the government buy all the stock and then sell it back to the workers. The workers own it. Set up worker councils who decide how to handle. Let them make the decisions. I mentioned this last hour, and somebody said, somebody wrote in and said, "What worker is going to buy worthless stock?" It's worthless because of what has happened. It doesn't have to remain worthless. The auto industry, I honestly believe, can be turned around. It's going to take creative analysis of, or not analysis. We all know what it needs. We all know what the auto industry needs. We are in a transition period here. This is the end of the agricultural era, and we're entering into the industrial revolution. That's what this is comparable to. It's the industrial revolution that ran for what? When did it start, Kathy? 1830s, 1840s? So it's lasted 170 years. It's over. It's over. It really is. If we want to maintain a planet on which we can live, it's over. We have to move to the next level, which is clean energy. A whole retooling of everything. I mean, everything has to be changed. I think the workers who would run General Motors or Ford or whatever the company is would not work against their own best interests on that level, would they? I understand that, you know, Missouri today, it was announced that Missouri, ultimately, all the votes were counted, Missouri went for McCain. Crazy. Crazy. And as far as Ohio, Ohio didn't go for Bush. The election was stolen in Ohio both times. I mean, Christ, we all know that. And the blue collar workers that comprise I'm guessing here, if not the majority of residents in Ohio, certainly a plurality. And there's got to be a majority of workers and residents in Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania. These are blue collar folks. Indiana. I don't know that I like the term blue collar. We have a new one now, huh? Relatively new. The past 10 years, pink collar. Huh? That's the girls. Blue collar. That's the boys. White collar, those are the bosses. So that's the conflict I have, Carol, is the full and certain knowledge that I have because I grew up in it, of how important union workers are, how important the idea of union, collective bargaining is. Not just as, although, as you point out, it's very important, a bulwark against fascism, but also as a means, a method, a gateway into so-called middle class, which means nothing more than, hey, I've got a job, I can take care of my family, I being husband and wife at this point, or husband and husband, wife and wife, you know, I don't give a damn, you know, whether it's same sex, opposite sex, it doesn't make any difference, a family, how's that? My family is able to support itself. We're able to take care of our children if we have them, take care of our parents if they need it, take care of each other. Capitalism doesn't provide for that. Capitalism doesn't provide any of that. None of that. No, capitalism murders that, kills it, slaughters it, butchers it, smothers it. Capitalism says, give me everything you've got, and when you finally can no longer breathe, I'll kick your ass to the curb and take your children, and then they can give me everything they've got. Hell, they used to do exactly that until child labor laws were put into place. Get into the mine and bring your goddamn 10-year-old with you. I don't want to hear him whining. Get him down there and get him to work. Ooh! I know how important unions are, Carol, I really do. And that's where the conflict resides for me. The auto industry has to hold itself responsible for where it is. It on some level, doesn't it? And the reason I fault Gettelfinger, the head of the UAW, only for the past 4 or 5 years, 6 years, is because, like I said, back in the day, I can remember hearing about John L. Lewis, head of the miners' union, Walter Reuther. Wasn't he labeled a communist at one point? Who was the guy at the Longshoremen's Union on the West Coast? These people who said to the bosses, we are going to organize. And, of course, the bosses had him killed, lynched, burned. But Ron Gettelfinger, in my opinion, should have been less willing to deal with the giveaways and more demanding about deal with us or your industry dies. And look what's happened.
blinded by inflation. Budgets cut down to the bone. We have got to stand together. This is no time to stand alone.
Doing talk radio right. From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour, and Amy writes that the American Constitution Society that I was mentioning a few minutes ago, because they are sending one of their members to be the new White House staff secretary. The American Constitution Society, Amy writes, is our side's version of the Federalist Society. Much needed. Well, good, because I have to plead ignorance. I've never heard of them. Back to your phone calls. Nancy is calling from Lenexa, Kansas, listening on the Internet. Hey, Nancy.
Hi.
How are you?
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
What I'm calling about is, as you call, and rightfully so, the rat bastard government doesn't bail out the auto industry with the $25 billion. More than 3 million jobs will be lost overnight. And let's put that into a little perspective. A study last week revealed that 80% of working Americans only have enough savings to pay their bills for 2 to 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
So that means within months, 2.4 million auto workers will be out of cash and either on government dole or living in the streets. And let's go a little further. Let's say the 2.4 million auto workers have a spouse and a child. So that means that 7.2 million Americans within months of the auto industry collapse would be on welfare lines or living in the streets. So if we let this $25 billion, which is a drop in the bucket compared to the $700 billion that we gave Wall Street without a blink,
mm-hmm.
if we let the industry, the auto industry go down, we're putting 7.2 million people on the street homeless within a couple of months. So this is a no-brainer. And to go even further, if people need to really think, we really do need to be scared. Because Chris Dobb, the head of the banking, I watched C-SPAN today. He's standing up there, oh, we don't know. Let's let the auto industry go down. There's a thing called the Bilderberg Group
mm-hmm.
and the Trilateral. And as I'm sitting here watching Obama's cabinet choices,
right.
they're all in the Bilderberg and the Trilateral Commission. Americans need to investigate what's going on. It's a coup d'etat. It's a coup d'etat against the American people. And they're doing away with unions, and they're going to send all our jobs down some Republican stronghold in the South where it doesn't have unions. So Americans need to wake up. There are shadow governments here. And to think Obama is the savior that's going to take us to the promised land, no. I voted for Obama. I'm a total liberal. But things are going on. It's a coup d'etat, guys. Read the Bilderberg Group, and you'll see all these names coming up. Larry Summers, big Bilderberg. He's going to be in front and the head of Treasury.
Yeah, but now wait a second. Wait a second. What makes the Trilateral Commission or the Council on Foreign Relations or the Bilderberg Group? I mean, are they aliens? Are they?
No, they're not aliens, Mike. And don't act like I've got a tinfoil hat.
No, no. What are they?
Who are they?
Yeah.
Right. Read the book. It's
well, no.
Called,
in your opinion, why are these people bad?
These are very elite. It's the David Rockefellers, the Morgan Chase. They have done this forever. If Americans think that every depression and recession hasn't had something to do with this very elite group, now they've got the golden apple. They've got the United States, and we're going down. So, they've stolen our elections. You know, they won this election. We won this election because if they had let Obama go, there would have been blood in the street, as you said. But again, what they put out there to the American people, what ABC, NBC, CBS, it's the Rockefeller broadcasting. And Fox is just right down there, you know, I mean. So people need to peel back the onion, guys. Start peeling back the layers of corruption here. Chris Dobb, he's Bilderberg. As you go through these people, it's a very select group. They're not there to help us. That's
all right, well, the only point I was trying to make, Nancy, is, you know, I've heard about these organizations, and yeah, I've looked at them. I don't know what they're about. If you believe that they are some conspiratorial group that is determined to sink the economy, the global economy, I mean, I'm not quite sure how that benefits. I'm not trying to play word games with you, and I'm not a stupid man. I just don't know how these Bilderbergers and Council on Foreign Relations, sure, just about everybody in government, I guess, is attends one of these groups. I don't know. Listen, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be right back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
Would that that were true. Back to your phone calls on the Malloy program here. Rich is calling from Texas, listening on Sirius. Hey, Rich.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Pretty good. Just want to say, you know, this bailout deal, I'm all for it. But I think they need to start throwing some money into job creation, because if they don't get some sustainable jobs, mm-hmm. all the money you can throw at Detroit ain't going to matter anyway, because we're still not going to be buying their cars, Nissan, Toyota, or anybody's.
Well, I agree. That's one of the reasons I really, really, really am behind the idea in my little tiny universe here of a modern equivalent. It'll be different, but it's the modern equivalent of what happened to get the country working again during the Great Depression until we got involved in World War II. And that was the Works Project, I think it was called the Works Project Administration, the
yep.
WPA.
Yep.
All the jobs that are begging in this country right now, I just can't fail to think, if that $700 billion that was just been earmarked to go to these financial jackasses, if that would have been handed over, in a sense, I don't mean literally, but put in a fund where small contractors, road builders, bridge builders, people that build schools, window glazers, masons, bricklayers, people who work in steel, little companies here all over the place, to go to work on rebuilding the infrastructure, this country would be back on its feet economically in what, 6 months?
Yeah, three, exactly. And while they were getting all that uplifted and putting people back to work doing other things, they could have maybe done some things with some of these trade deals and corrected some of these
there you go.
Mistakes that Ronald Reagan had made. And it would have bought us time to do it.
That's right.
And that $700 billion would have been well spent. I was telling a friend of mine today, I said, if they had spent all that money and worked away from the bottom up, I mm-hmm. said, we'd be fine.
Yeah,
I said they're in this full belief that it trickles down, and the only thing that ever trickles down is somebody whizzing on your back telling you it's raining.
that's very true. That's very true, Rich. All right, listen, man, thank you. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. I hope that the Obama presidency, I mean, come on, he's got to have people that are already telling him this. I think about Reich, his former labor secretary. What's Reich's first name? Robert Reich. I think it was Robert Reich, former labor secretary. I'm sure he is telling Obama now, this is what you need. Because Robert Reich I think he's a very brilliant man. Not that I agree with all his policies, but I think he understands. And what Rich was just talking about, throwing hundreds of millions, billions at these upper echelon pigs who are doing what? Remember a couple of when was it? It seems like a lifetime ago, 5-6 weeks ago, when Paulson and the other guy went in front of Congress, the American public, and news media, and said, "We got to have this right now, right now. You can't think, you can't plan, you can't debate this. Just give us the money. This is going to save everything." What the hell has it saved? Nothing. Has it? I don't see anything. I hope that the Obama administration is already laying plans on how they're going to set up, call them banks, where money will be on deposit. It's available. If it just requires printing it, at this point, I don't give a damn. Money will be available for small contractors. And maybe not so small. I'm at this point, I'm saying keep the behemoths, the great big nasty ass corporations out of it. But where smaller companies run by working men and working women can go to these banks, and the projects will be laid out. There will be project managers that will be government from the government. You're damn right. Do you know what we need here in Atlanta? And the city doesn't have the money. The last I heard, it's between, I may have these numbers wrong, between $6 and $10 billion to rebuild the sewer system in the city of Atlanta, parts of which were in place when Sherman blew into town and burned the city to the ground. And Atlanta certainly is not unique in that. There are so many cities, rural areas. The rural electrification grid needs working on. Bridges, dams, schools, roadbeds, railroad beds. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And I just hope that an Obama administration will realize that and will set up these lending institutions or banks, whatever you want to call them. I'd prefer to call them credit unions. At least that'll make people feel a little more confident. The hell with the banks. Set up these credit unions where the money is loaned out to begin this work. And how long would it take? Steve is calling from Madison, listening on the mic. Steve, welcome to the program. Hey, Steve.
Yeah. Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, is this Mike Malloy?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Oh, great. Pleasure to speak with you. I listen to your show all the time.
Thank you.
About the auto industry, I mean, I have so much to say, but I was listening to a show this morning, and they were talking about flex fuel and how they wanted to change the cars. And they're talking about, you know, the electric cars and things. And I'm just thinking that the auto industry, I mean, myself, I don't make that much money, and I get a raise once a year, and it's like a quarter. 25 cents, you know, if I jump through 20 hoops, you know, and buy nice clothes and wear a tie and make myself look like I'm doing something.
Mm-hmm.
you know, Now they want us to buy an electric car that's probably going to cost $40,000, and then they're going to want us to plug it in to an outlet and charge us more on our electric bill. My electric bill to heat my house, a two-bedroom apartment, goes up in the winter to, you know, $150-$200 a month.
Yeah.
Okay, and on the wages I make, I can barely afford my electric bill and rent.
Mm-hmm.
And now they want to sell us a Volt car. I think that they can make cars, you know, that are affordable to people and turn them over a lot faster than having to go out and spend $40,000 on a car at a time.
Well, I think, Steve, I'm not trying to be a smartass here, but I think you might be missing the point. I don't think the point is to get everybody to buy $40,000 hybrid automobiles. I think the point is to for the automakers, whoever they are, whether they're German, Japanese, American, Chinese, it doesn't matter, for the automakers to produce hybrid automobiles that are affordable, that may be run on a combination of internal combustion and electricity, or that eventually will work off hydrogen fuel cells or what have you. I don't think there is some plan afoot to get everybody to buy these expensive hybrid. What am I talking about? I don't know anymore. Anyway, Steve. Oh, by the way, the Longshoremen's Union, that I couldn't think of. Harry Bridges was the guy who headed up the International Longshoremen's Workers Union. I guess it was the full title. And he was accused of being a communist. I think at one time he probably said, yeah, hell yeah, so what? I know he was Australian, immigrant to this country, and ran the ILWU. Is that how it was referred to? I think so. Sanchez is calling from Montebello, California, listening on KTOK. Hi, Sanchez.
Hey, very good evening to you, Senor Molloy.
How are you?
I'm acceptable but cranky. I've been this way for several weeks. It's very good to be able to talk to you. And thank goodness that you gave us that little crumb of enlightenment by telling us that why doesn't the government buy the stocks? Why doesn't the government buy out these corrupt corporations and give them to the workers? Get rid of
them. Yeah, well, you know, that wasn't my idea. That came in an email. I'd like to take credit for it, but that's not my idea.
Okay, I must have missed when you read that. I think it's
a great idea.
I think it's a good idea. I think I know the Carol that wrote you the email about the union workers. It sounds very much like my dear friend Carol. I will say to Nancy that, yes, not only is it the Carlyle Group and all everything else that she was mentioning, but this is also a perfect case of shock doctrine.
Sure.
Smash and grab, shock to the system. At this point, Henry Paulson, a few months ago at the start of this bailout controversy, was behaving like Donald Rumsfeld at the start of the Iraq War.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it may last this way. You go to war with the equipment you have, not with the equipment you want. And basically, you give me this money, and that's all there is to it. The same callous attitude. And where has it gotten us? I cannot trust these people anymore with any amount of money. I feel sorry.
Sanchez, let me put you on hold for a second.
Okay.
And we'll come back and chat for about another minute right after this break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M.
Imagine one day being able to drive your car with hydrogen as its power source and water driblets as the output of your engine. Hydrogen is the input, water is the output, and in the meantime, your car is going.
Well, I can't wait. Hot damn. I'll tell you what, though, I'd rather have it run on peanut butter, and then the exhaust fume would be nothing but jelly. 10 before the hour, thanks to Ian Huff, Ben Burt, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Bruce Enberg, and our executive producer, Catherine Bay. Back to Sanchez in California. All right, where were we?
Boy, I tell you what, I'd rather see him up on trial for crimes against humanity, but that's another story.
That is true.
I'm going to go real quick here, man, because I just want to make this really clear. I really feel for you, the UAW. I know that they're trying to be progressive, but in the overview here, they are the crew members on the Titanic, and you've got to realize that. And you cannot blame American consumers for buying foreign products when they're being manufactured better than the American products are. So,
but, can you blame the United Auto Worker Union member who certainly does not set design policy?
I understand.
Or mileage policy, or you understand what I'm saying?
Yes. Well, all you have to do is mention who killed the electric car, and when you realize that GM has in its lock, in its safe somewhere, the patent to an electric battery that we could have and would revolutionize the electric car industry. They could have done that. Mm-hmm. We could be sitting in a completely different world right now had GM had the conscience. The consciousness and the responsibility and the foresight to be able to want to do this. But no, they've been in collusion for so long with the oil companies, and I'm not telling you anything new. We already know all this stuff. So,
well, this is making a case for the idea of turning ownership of the company.
Yes.
Over to the workers, set
yep.
up worker committees. I know yep. this is starting to sound like Soviet communism,
no.
which it certainly is not intended
no.
to be and would not turn out that way.
No.
But
Mike, at some point you have got to draw the line. Are you going to let Henry Paulsons of the world continue to, like, fling money? Are we going to continue with this credit card mentality till the Treasury and our wallets are bled dry at this point? People out here on the streets, Mike, are out of work through no fault of their own. I mean, you know this, but I'm just saying that people are hurting, and they're getting extremely upset that we're continuing to throw money at people that don't deserve it. And at this point, why don't we just put a hold on it? Let's wait till the next administration comes in that has some semblance, at least, of responsibility at this point, and just take it out of the hands of these criminals, because nothing that they've done up to this point has turned out right. So why are we going to turn around? Why is, I mean, what's her name? Oh, God. Maxine Waters was upset because she went ahead and proposed, let's bail out these people. And then Henry Paulson, in the black of night, turned around and changed all the rules, changed everything, and lost half the money right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
And Maxine Waters is extremely upset. They don't know what they're doing. They have no idea. And if they're not, it's, again, part of the shock doctrine where they're just robbing the poor and readjusting, and all the wealth goes up to the top. Like, again, those shadow governments, those Carlyle groups, and everyone else, the trilateral commissions. I mean, just to wrap up what Nancy was saying.
Well, you know, my feeling about that, and Sanchez, thanks, man. I'm got to leave there. We're starting to run out of time here. But, If something is not done to bring to an end the income disparity that is greater now probably than it's ever been since feudal times, okay, maybe not quite. Well, yeah, probably on that level in certain instances. If something is not done to stabilize the working class in this country, and that's most of us. Most of us do not make our money from investments or portfolios, or we don't make money on money, interest payments, what have you. We make money because we go to work. Regardless of what it is that we do, we still go to work, and we are paid. Now, that may be in the context of a small business or an independent whatever it is that you're doing, but most of us go to work, and we either produce something or contribute something. The financial services industry, other than granting credit when it damn well pleases them, and then sometimes at usurious rates, the financial services industry is a goddamn casino. It's like Atlantic City or Las Vegas. Okay, maybe there should be Atlantic Cities and Las Vegases, but not where it is a determining factor on how our economy goes, right? I mean, hello? if it continues, we are heading for real chaos. And I'm wondering, and I'm really wondering this now. I mean, gut level, how much more are we going to be able to absorb before all of a sudden there is an awful rumbling that starts somewhere in the heartland of this country and works its way across the country, and it turns into open rebellion? How much longer? I'm serious. I think about this more than I probably should, and maintain some form of mental health. But how much longer before, if something is not done, how much longer before the American people, and I don't know about the other countries, I'm talking about here, the other societies, the American people say, okay, that's it. That's it. We've been pushed around enough. We've been lied to enough. We've watched everything shrink or disappear. We have families. We're parts of families. We have this. We have that. We are not going to stand for it anymore. Now, how much longer before that happens? That is something that is really, really weighing on my mind. And I don't have an answer any more than you do. But I do know this. At some point, there is a break point. There is a point, maybe it's on an unconscious level, where people say, this far and no further. God help us if we get to that. And we're drifting towards that. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.